This is Company Cars, the podcast that tries to make sense of the car business. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Company Cars. This week, we kick off a multi-episode series about hydrogen fuel cell cars. We'll start the series by exploring what exactly is a hydrogen fuel cell car, who makes and sells these, and how these cars work. In our next episode, we'll talk about the history behind the car, and in our final episode of the three-part series, we'll compare fuel cell cars with battery electric vehicles and how the two technologies may or may not coexist over the next few decades. And today, we'll also take a long-delayed listener question about me and my background, so let's get started. To kick us off, what exactly is a hydrogen-powered car anyway? So hydrogen-powered cars can actually take one of two approaches. One way of using hydrogen to power a car is to burn hydrogen as a type of fuel inside an internal combustion engine. So similar to a gasoline engine, but instead of burning gasoline, you burn hydrogen. The other approach is to combine hydrogen with oxygen in a chemical reaction inside the car and use the result of this chemical reaction to power electric motors in what is called a fuel cell, which gives rise to the label of a fuel cell electric vehicle. So we'll focus our attention on the second type, the fuel cell electric vehicle, because all of the currently available hydrogen-powered cars are hydrogen-powered fuel cell electric vehicles. So in a fuel cell electric vehicle, hydrogen is used to generate electricity on board for a car that's powered by electric motors. So this is slightly different from what is colloquially known as an electric vehicle, which are more accurately described as a battery electric vehicle. So these would be like a Tesla or a Nissan Leaf. And a battery electric vehicle works by having a battery on board that you recharge and you plug the car into a charger and you deplete the battery to power the vehicle. In contrast, a fuel cell electric vehicle like a Toyota Mirai or Honda Clarity actively generates the electricity it needs onboard the car through the use of hydrogen fuel. And you replenish the supply of hydrogen by filling a tank that holds hydrogen gas in the car. So similar to filling a gas tank. One big benefit of a fuel cell electric vehicle is this arrangement functionally eliminates range anxiety that many drivers have about battery electric vehicles. And this is because fuel cell electric vehicles generally come with hydrogen tanks that are large enough to accommodate enough hydrogen for 200 plus miles of range. And not all battery electric vehicles had 200 miles of range until very recently. In addition, refueling a hydrogen tank only takes about 3 to 5 minutes, or about the same amount of time it takes to refuel a gasoline-powered car, which compared with even the fastest of DC fast chargers is much faster than the 15, 20, or 30 minutes it takes to recharge a battery electric vehicle using a fast charger. So that's one of the appeals of a hydrogen fuel cell vehicle, and is that it kind of gives you the benefits of a gas-powered car with the benefits of an electric vehicle. But the downside is you can't refuel your hydrogen fuel cell car at home like you could charge a battery electric vehicle, because refueling hydrogen requires access to a hydrogen station with a pump. And hydrogen tanks inside the car typically are quite large because hydrogen can be pretty hard to compress in the size of a small gas tank. And so the trunks of fuel cell vehicles like a Toyota Mirai or Honda Clarity can be quite small relative to the size of the car and relative to other similarly sized gasoline cars. Finally, the biggest drawback of a hydrogen fuel cell electric car is the cost. So the few cars that are on the market are quite costly, and it costs the automakers a lot to produce the materials and the pieces you need to construct a fuel cell electric vehicle. Speaking of the cars on the market, what does the market for fuel cell vehicles look like right now? So who all sells one? Well, right now there are 3 fuel cell electric vehicles that I'm aware of that are available in the United States. And all 3 of them are available only in the state of California, or sometimes only in Southern California, so in the greater Los Angeles, San Diego metropolitan areas. And so these 3 cars are the Toyota Mirai, which starts at $49,500, the Hyundai Nexo, which has a starting price of $58,935, and the Honda Clarity, which is only available to lease at a price of $379 a month for 36 months and $2,878 due at signing. So these cars are pretty expensive, and the prices are high, but one thing that's not accounted for in these prices, aside from the Honda Clarity lease, is there are lots of government rebates offered to incentivize the purchase of these cars. So qualified buyers can get $8,000 in federal tax credits and another $4,500 in rebates from the state of California. So if you can combine both of them, you can get $12,500 back in rebates and credits right out of the gate. And that's before any discounting or incentives offered by the automakers. And these rebates dramatically bring down the price closer to that of a battery electric vehicle, like a Tesla Model 3, Ford Mustang Mach-E, or VW ID4. In addition, automakers often include generous discounts and incentives related to these cars. So automakers often include things like gift cards to pay for hydrogen fuel, subsidized lease arrangements like the one for the Honda Clarity, and additional cash rebates to make the cars more attractive. In addition, in the state of California, hydrogen-powered cars come with fringe benefits like HOV access or free parking sometimes, although you may have to give up the $4,500 rebate to get HOV lane access in a hydrogen car. As a side note here, one piece of advice I would have about owning a hydrogen car is that if you're interested in one and you live in California, you should lease the car instead of buying it, because the technology here is changing so rapidly and the cars are such niche products that it could be very difficult to sell the car when you're ready to move on to something else if you own the car outright. Plus, most of the incentives apply to both owners and lessees, so you could still reap the benefits from some of the big government rebates and incentives by leasing the car, and you wouldn't have to deal with thinking about how you would sell the car when you're done. So one thing I've mentioned is that these cars are only available in California, and sometimes only available in Southern California. And the main reason why this is the case is because of the lack of hydrogen fueling infrastructure nationwide. So unlike a battery electric vehicle, you can't refuel a hydrogen car at home. You have to go to a hydrogen fueling station. And there just aren't that many of these stations outside of the state of California. So according to the Alternative Fuels Data Center, which is a project that's a part of the U.S. Department of Energy, as of yesterday, so February 13th, 2021, there were 47 retail hydrogen stations in the United States, 45 of which are in California, one in Hawaii, and one in Connecticut. So it's pretty difficult to find a place to refuel a hydrogen car if you don't live in California. It's also important to note that within the state of California, most of these refueling stations are clustered in Southern California, so Los Angeles, Orange County, and San Diego, or the Bay Area near San Francisco. So because these stations are clustered in Los Angeles and San Francisco, the hydrogen car makers have clustered their sales in these markets, because otherwise it's just impractical to expect somebody who lives in Nashville or Kansas City to be able to buy a hydrogen car and figure out a way to fill the car up. California has a lot of hydrogen fuel stations, not out of any random distribution of stations or because companies thought it was a compelling market opportunity. California has a lot of hydrogen fueling stations because they made an organized effort at the state level to construct a hydrogen highway during the 2000s. So the idea behind the hydrogen highway was to build a network of hydrogen fueling stations throughout the state to make it possible for drivers to drive a hydrogen-powered car from the California-Oregon border all the way down to the California-Mexico border. And this initiative was started by Republican Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger in 2004 and renewed in 2013 by Democratic Governor Jerry Brown, who authorized the expansion of the network to up to 100 stations over time. No other states really pursued quite this organized of an effort to build out a hydrogen network, but the current network isn't as comprehensive as the plan that Governor Schwarzenegger imagined in 2004. So when he authorized the construction of the highway, he envisioned the super expansive network throughout the whole state. But the financial crisis severely curtailed these plans, and so as they were building out the network, they focused on the two major population centers in the state. So they focused on the Los Angeles metro area and the San Francisco Bay Area for these stations. And that's how we end up with today's hydrogen network, where most of the stations are clustered in these two cities. And then there are some stations along the interstate between LA and San Francisco, but you still can't quite drive from the Oregon border to Mexico yet purely on hydrogen fuel. And so what makes hydrogen fuel cell cars so attractive? And part of what makes hydrogen fuel cell cars so attractive is that hydrogen is a very abundant natural resource. So it's actually the most abundant natural resource on the planet, and you can produce hydrogen gas using renewable methods like electrolysis, which splits a water atom into the hydrogen and oxygen components. And as long as the electricity that you're using to split the water comes from a renewable resource like wind or solar, then the hydrogen that results from the process is also considered a renewable resource. So the idea that we could produce fuel for vehicles in a renewable way with a very abundant natural resource is extremely compelling to a lot of people in the hydrogen fuel area. And now it's time for a short break. We'll hear from our sponsors and we'll share some information about how to submit a listener question. The Company Cars podcast is sponsored by Rejected Conjectures Incorporated, a division of Integrated Derivatives. If you have a question that you want answered on the show, write us an email at companycarspodcast@gmail.com. However, it's possible to produce hydrogen using a method known as fossil fuel reforming, which is mixing natural gas with steam to produce CO2 and hydrogen separately. And this is not a renewable clean energy method, but this is how most hydrogen is produced today because it's much more cost effective than to produce hydrogen using renewable methods. The state of California does have a mandate that a third of the state's hydrogen for hydrogen fueling stations needs to come from renewable resources, but this still means that about two-thirds of the fuel that goes into a hydrogen car is coming from non-renewable resources like natural gas. So over time, most experts anticipate that the share of hydrogen coming from renewable resources should increase. And for the hydrogen that is produced using fossil fuel reforming, there are new technologies that involve carbon sequestration to capture the CO2 that comes from the CO2 and the hydrogen being produced separately, to put the CO2 back in the ground and reduce the carbon emissions out in the air that comes from generating hydrogen fuel. Thinking about the future of the hydrogen car, it's quite unclear what the outlook is for hydrogen fuel cell vehicles. Several automakers are working on fuel cell technology, but right now most automakers are focused on the immediate goal of transitioning their product portfolio from traditional gas cars to battery-powered electric vehicles. For example, while GM and Honda are working together on a hydrogen fuel cell platform, both automakers are emphasizing the battery electric vehicle side of their work much more in the press and the media and their upcoming product announcements than their hydrogen fuel cell work. Hydrogen fuel cell technology is still relatively early stage compared to battery electric vehicles. And so I would expect to see not a lot of action in terms of new products or new cars in this space over the next 3 to 5 years, but maybe we'll see more over the next 5 to 10 years as the technology matures, as we reach kind of saturation with battery electric vehicles. Then once battery electric vehicles go mainstream, then automakers will put more attention on the next big thing. So similar to how automakers spent a lot of time on hybrid powertrains in the 2000s, where hybrids are a mix of a gas engine and an electric engine. And then once those products were fairly mainstream and were pretty well accepted by the general public, they started to shift some of their R&D dollars into battery electric vehicles. So I anticipate that once battery electric vehicles become pretty mainstream, then we'll see more effort and more attention placed on hydrogen. But right now, most automakers seem to be focusing on battery electric vehicles and bringing down the cost of production for batteries and building out a charging infrastructure nationally. A good example of this is Audi had plans to bring out a hydrogen fuel cell SUV called the H-tron, and instead they canceled these plans, and they have decided to focus their time and effort on a big portfolio of new battery-powered electric vehicles like the e-tron and the e-tron Sportback. But some automakers like BMW are still moving ahead with hydrogen fuel cell cars. So BMW recently reconfirmed that they're planning to offer a hydrogen fuel cell powered X5 sometime in 2022 as a test project for its fuel cell technology that it's built with Toyota. But the X5 hydrogen powered car is expected to be very low volume, probably geography restricted again to Southern California. And it's mainly meant as a proof of concept and just to prove to themselves that the technology works and maybe to gather some data on people's usage patterns. The biggest Achilles heel that keeps hydrogen cars from being more popular is the classic chicken and egg problem. Consumers are unlikely to buy or lease a hydrogen-powered car until there's a robust fueling infrastructure they can depend on, but companies interested in providing hydrogen fueling infrastructure are reluctant to invest in that infrastructure until there's a critical mass of fuel cell electric vehicles on the road. We see a similar problem with battery electric vehicles, but for battery electric vehicles, the problem isn't quite so bad because owners of battery electric vehicles can charge their cars at home. So automakers have been really emphasizing home charging and plugging your car into a regular wall. But for hydrogen, both of those options are off the table. So any new fuel cell powered cars on the market are likely going to go to markets that already have this fueling infrastructure, so Southern California or the state of California as a whole. And so until there's this organized effort, either by governments or by an industry coalition, to build a big network of fueling infrastructure for hydrogen cars, then it's kind of challenging for an automaker to try to sell a car when there's no place for you to fill it up. And it's very difficult for a fueling company to build a bunch of stations for cars that don't exist. And one possible avenue to kind of break the logjam here is there seems to be a lot of promising developments in hydrogen fuel cells for commercial trucks, so semi-trucks and delivery trucks. And those cars are going to need a robust highway infrastructure too. And we may see something develop along the lines of diesel, where there's not quite as many diesel stations that are meant for normal passenger cars, but people can find diesel for big semi-trucks everywhere. And so if you have a diesel passenger car like a Volkswagen or a Mercedes-Benz, then you're kind of piggybacking on that semi-truck infrastructure that's out there. But we'll see what happens. Right now, there's not a very strong hydrogen fueling infrastructure in general, but if the semi-truck market for hydrogen fuel cells really takes off, then maybe we'll see kind of this network slowly start to develop and the consumer-facing hydrogen fuel cell car a bit closer to reality and the mainstream than it is today. So in the next episodes, we'll dive into the history of hydrogen fuel cell vehicles and how we got to where we are, and we'll compare the economics of battery electric vehicles and hydrogen fuel cell vehicles and talk about the pros and cons of each. So that's what's coming next in these series. Now it's time for listener questions. This week, our listener question comes from Susan in Brooklyn, New York, who writes, "Why didn't you introduce yourself on the first episode? I bet everyone would like to know about you and why you're so into cars." So why am I so into cars? So this is a really good question, and I hadn't really thought about it until this listener question came in. So some people who are really enthusiastic about cars come from families that are in the car business. So either their parents worked for an automaker in some capacity, or their parents were also car enthusiasts. But my parents are not car enthusiasts, and my parents don't work in the automotive industry. So it is a bit of a mystery how I got so into cars. I think where it comes from and my earliest memory of being into cars is in the mid-90s, my parents were looking to buy a new car, and I think I was 5 or 6 years old. And so they would take us to these auto shows where you could look at all these different cars without the pressure of being in a dealership, and you could sit in them, touch them, poke around the trunk, poke under the hood, and ask questions of people if you had questions about the cars. And this was like a family outing for us once, where we could go and see the cars that my parents were thinking about buying. And I just kind of got really into it. I really enjoyed getting in and out of the cars, getting the free brochures that you used to get and the free souvenirs that you used to get at auto shows to help you think of the car and remember the car when you actually went to the dealership later. And I remember I went to one auto show where I saw this one concept car that really caught my eye. And concept cars are usually styling exercises or some sort of exercise for the automaker to test a new idea with the public and see if they like it. And I remember seeing this bright red two-seater electric car from GM. It was called the EV1. And I saw it and I just thought it was the coolest, most futuristic car ever. I mean, it was a car that you started not by turning a key, but by punching in a 10-digit code. And I was just super interested in this car, and it was really cool, and I thought it was super cool. And that kind of got me started. And then my parents spent a lot of time researching this new car that they bought, and so they would always have all these guides and Consumer Reports magazines lying around. And so I just started reading them because they were around the house, and I was bored, and I got really into it. And I got really into understanding the automotive market and what cars were coming out and what features they had and knowing everything I could know about them. And I didn't really have any strong engineering abilities as I kind of grew up and learned that I wasn't really much of a science person. So I got really into the business side of it. So my parents weren't in the automotive business, but my parents were business people. They were economists and college professors who taught business. And so I got really into the business side of the automotive world, and that's what got me into things like what automakers are doing, how they're setting their corporate strategy. And I was kind of in my teenage years during the 2008 financial crisis, and the Detroit-based automakers were asking for government assistance. In particular, Chrysler Corporation and GM wanted federal support to survive the financial crisis. And that's where I got really interested into the finances and the business side of the companies. And then I got really lucky when I started working. I went to work for a consulting firm, and I had all sorts of different clients, but I knew I wanted a chance to work for an automotive client. And I had that chance show up at the beginning of 2016. I started serving automotive clients, and I had a lot of fun thinking about the business strategy and marketing strategy for a couple different products and automakers. And that really solidified, I think, my interest and my interest in developing kind of this business understanding of the car business. And so I had a great time, and I learned a lot from each of those engagements that I worked on while I was a consultant. And so after I left and decided to go to graduate school, which is where I'm at now, I just kind of kept up with it. I kept reading the industry publications that I read when I served automotive clients, and I kept looking at new product reveals and trying to learn about why different automakers were doing different things. And that's kind of snowballed to where we are now. And somewhere along the way, several people suggested that I do a podcast about all of this stuff, just to kind of chat about the things that other people might find interesting. And also, for those of you out there who are friends with me, so that I can have an outlet to get all of this information out. And that way, when we're actually hanging out, maybe post-pandemic, then I won't bore you as much to tears when we're in person. I can save that for the podcast, so to speak. But anyway, that's kind of a brief history of how I got really into cars. I mean, to tie it all together, I think it kind of started with the GM EV1 and kind of this very sleek Jetson-style two-seater sports car. And it really developed from there over time. And kind of my interest in the business stems from my inability to be an engineer more than anything else, and understanding kind of the business decisions that go on behind the engineering. And this was a great question. I hadn't really put too much thought into this until this question came in. So hopefully that gives you a little bit of an insight into why I'm so excited about cars, and specifically the car business. We'll keep doing this. Of course, it takes a whole village to make a podcast, and so we want to make sure we give due credit to the individuals involved with making this podcast. Our chief technical advisor is Turn It Off and On, and our legal and strategy consultant is Bill Me More. Finally, we're assisted by our product planner, Ada Trim, and our finance and insurance manager, Mark Up the Rates. Thank you for listening to our show, and make sure to subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.